And we are back once again for the 384th time, Parish of the Patriots. Glad you could join us this week. As always, striving to have an insightful, thoughtful, hopefully entertaining, informative discussion. And as always, I do appreciate you joining in once again. 384th time this week. It just goes, for better or for worse, it just goes on and on. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. I say that tongue in cheek, of course. We do got the snail mail. You look on the description for each show here on the individual page. Radio Albion got snail mail. None of that Bitcoin, none of that cryptocurrency, nothing convoluted. We're old school. We're analog. We use a stamp. And it is always very much appreciated. And of course, speaking of, the description page for each show, and hopefully y'all listen to the whole thing. You know, the description page doesn't usually even begin. I mean, as you all know, it doesn't begin to cover as much of a summary, because a lot of times this thing's like a shotgun. We're all over the place. We're covering lots of topics. And the description page, honestly, could be 2 pages long if I actually really summarized in depth each thing we talk about. I just try to kind of put down high points and move along and just have faith that y'all will tune in. Get something out of it. Usually this is our cue to go into the listener supporter mailbag, but the mail is empty this week. So without further ado, we can move forward. I've got some really, I think, pertinent Christian specific stuff to get into, which, as you all well know, I think is the important part of doing the show, is the part I'm actually interested in. The rest of this is okay, but take it or leave it one way or the other. Christian specific stuff is the really relevant, pertinent stuff. And we will get into that, but I thought we'd get into a few other topics, or at least one. Something interesting I read the other day, and no, I'm not going to read from the article. I never do that, virtually never do that on this show. But I am speaking of an article read the other day, and it appears that the Trump administration held a meeting. They sent Marco Rubio out, met with some other foreign diplomats and whatnot, and they had a meeting concerning the designation of various left-wing groups, Antifa types, as terrorist organizations. Now, the article, the person writing the article, you know, it was written very much from a standpoint of cheerleading this, of, you know, this is about time. And of course, yours truly, I always have to read. Whenever I come across something like this, I'm always reading with both eyes open and an eyebrow raised, and questions that don't necessarily, I think, the average person, when they come across this, necessarily winds up asking. No, like I say, the person writing this article very much was like, you know, it's about time. And when you read through the article, you know, it's understandably so, because, you know, the Trump administration has this meeting. They send out Marco Rubio. They have this meeting talking about, you know, it's time to crack down on these left-wing groups. They're domestic terrorists. And they gave some examples from several years, you know, over the years. And these examples were, of course, primarily in Europe, you know, and it's things that are literal definition of terrorism, because, you know, they're always loose in these narratives. They're always very loose with their definitions. You always have to try to hold them to that. But the examples they gave over the years of terrorist incidents, things like attacking the power grid, rather, you know, disabling commuter trains, stranding people. I think it was in Germany, you know, and they can't get to work. You know, things like that. Literal terrorism here, not the usual, you said mean words and so you're a terrorist, or you disagree with the government, so you're a terrorist. Things that would literally fall into the category of terrorism, attacking civilian infrastructure. In the name of, most of these examples given, you know, it's in the name of, we have a climate emergency. And so, of course, we have to attack the power grid and strand the wages so they can't, you know, they're on their sardine can speeding to their wage slave jobs, and we have to disrupt their lives and make their lives even more miserable than they already are. Now, I want to put a pin in that. We'll come back and pick up. But do you ever notice on things like this? they attack a power grid, you know, and disable commuter train, things like that, in the name of, you know, saving the earth or whatever nonsense. You ever find it funny? Because, like I said, these are literal definition of terrorist activities. I mean, but ever notice they don't attack the banks? When was the last time you heard of an Antifa attack against BlackRock? Against, you know, one of these big Wall Street firms? Against the banks? It never happens, right? They always attack the little people. We have to stop the destruction of the planet. Think about this. They claim that the planet is being destroyed by corporatism, by corporate interest, by the capitalists. Then the powerful, the rich. And their answer is, let's attack the wage slaves and make their lives even more miserable than they already are. Isn't that kind of curious? That should give people a clue, isn't it? It should give them a hint. You know, I'm sure low IQ people that get involved in this on the ground level, grassroots type leftists, they think they're doing a great thing. But, you know, this is why you never, ever, you know, want to abandon your critical thinking. You know, let's say you really think the earth is being destroyed. I disagree with that on a number, you know, on a number of bases. But setting that aside, let's say you're one of these people and you really believe that, you know, we're all going to die in 10 years or something. I don't know what the hell the timeline is. It's changed so many times over my life. When I was a little kid, we were being inundated with propaganda that we were coming to a new ice age and we were all going to freeze to death. I've been through that too. We're all going to burn to death. The earth is going to light off. And now we're in this just vague climate change thing. And, you know, when it's summertime in Texas, they tell us we're under a heat dome and the world is ending because of climate change. And it's like, and we just call that summer here. But anyway, nevertheless, imagine you're one of these people and you believe this. You should have the critical thinking ability to at least, you know, when your group that you meet up with, you all get together on Discord or whatever you do. You know, and it's like, we're planning a big operation. What's the big operation? You know, we're going to take down this electric substation and we'll knock out power to 10,000 people, regular working people. You should ask yourself, what's the purpose of this? You know, setting aside your views on how, whether or not it's valid that this is even going on. Setting that aside, if you have critical thinking, if you're one of these grassroots leftists, you should stop and think, wait a minute, what's the purpose of this? We're going to knock out electricity for 10,000 regular working people, just people minding their own business, living in their house, needing heat in the winter or air conditioning in the summer. This is your answer. Now, your leadership, those who always are wrangling this stuff, they claim the world is being destroyed by the capitalists. You should stop and ask yourself, why aren't we attacking the capitalists? We're attacking the people out here that have nothing to do with any of it. You should find it kind of strange that the target is always regular people. As if the regular people, and maybe the argument, I'm sure the argument, the justification people give themselves in their minds is that, you know, well, we'll outrage the public to the point where they'll join our side and demand that the government do something. This, of course, requires being completely blind to that the government does not care what the people want. You know, I mean, they don't care. It doesn't matter how miserable you make the wages lives. They do not care. We're all just slaves in their eyes. But again, if the world is being destroyed by the capitalists, then why aren't you targeting, you know, the flagships of capitalism, big Wall Street investment firms, the banks? No, it's always targeting the people that don't have any power, the absolute powerless people. Now, circling back to where we put our pin in our story, they're referencing these terrorist acts over the years by leftist extremists. And again, the standpoint of the person writing this article was basically, and understandably, one of, well, it's about time. You know, it's about time. These people are doing textbook terrorism. It is about time. We have all of these examples laid out in the story of leftist terrorists, terrorist actions. And finally, the Trump administration is going to do something. And again, understandably, it's normal for people to have the reaction of, yeah, finally, these people are going to get theirs. But as I read through this, I had one question that kept just getting brighter and brighter in my mind. And that question being, why now? They're laying out examples of extreme leftist terrorism, Antifa-type terrorism over the years. And I'm thinking, but okay, you're cracking down on that. You're going to make them, supposedly you're talking about, believe it when I see it, but you're talking about make them into designated terrorist groups now. But why now? Now you could say, well, because, you know, Donald Trump, you know, he's finally the white hats are in charge. That's a whole nother thing. I got to stay on topic here. Let's keep going. There's another thing I could divert off of, but. You reminded that at the tail end of his first administration, we had BLM riots kicking off in the country. Here we are. Why now? That's the pertinent question. They themselves in the article were giving us examples of left-wing terrorism. But why now? Now all of a sudden they're making serious moves talking about designating them as terrorists. And I'll give you the answer to the reason why I think that is. And that is because recently, you know, we're seeing more and more agitation from the grassroots leftists, not the leaderships, not the ones that are on your compromised Discord accounts. And believe me, if you don't understand that those are, then I'm sorry, bless your heart. But the grassroots leftists, you're seeing a growing outrage towards Israel, the anti-Israel pro-Palestinian stuff. You're really seeing a swelling up of disgust, and you know, anybody who's a decent human being looks at Israel's behavior, collective behavior on the world stage, and you can't help. You've got more and more people openly talking about, you know, we 10 years ago, we were talking about how our politicians are bought and paid for and owned by the Israel lobby. Well, you know, we were dismissed as evil right-wing lunatics, and now everybody is just literally out in the open, and they still don't care. They're still just doing what they're doing. They just voted again on this whole basically merging certain aspects of the U.S. military with the Israeli military. I mean, they don't even care that, you know. This is, again, why waking people up, there's multiple reasons it's a waste of time, and not the least of which is, even if you do, they don't care. They go on and do it anyway. They know nobody wanted that, and they're doing it anyway. None of these Congress people stand up there and say, well, I went and talked to my constituents, and they were in the streets demanding we merge the U.S. military with the IDF. They just do it anyway. But you are seeing people in the grassroots left that have been previously very useful on other fronts have now gotten very justifiably outraged about Israel and about Israel's control of the U.S. government. This is my belief. This is what this, having a meeting and now we're going to talk about designating left-wing groups as terrorists. This is what it's about. Now, make no mistake, I'm not defending Antifa here. And again, the article laid out very good literal examples of terrorism. You go blow up a substation and knock 10,000 people's power out, that is an, you know, with political goals in mind, thinking somehow that that's going to change things politically. That is a terrorism. Attacks on civilians is terrorism. But again, but why now? Why all of a sudden is the government, which has not been concerned about it up to this point, like at all, and in fact has justified it, why all of a sudden now? And again, I think this is where it comes from, because grassroots leftists have become more and more outraged. And like I say, I'm not defending Antifa or leftists. But the truth is truth, and they are correct on this, on being outraged about this. I think everybody should be outraged. Your politicians literally are owned by a foreign government. That's something to be outraged about. Here's the thing. The government doesn't really change their playbook up much. So once you start recognizing the way they operate, the patterns, you get quicker about it. You don't have to be real smart. You just pick up the patterns. And there's a reason they don't change their playbook much, and that is that it's very effective. It actually works really well. You read a story like this, and it's real easy to say, finally, these people are getting theirs. You know, because the target of the people is someone you don't like. You know, I'm no fan of Antifa or hardcore leftists. But, you know, so it's easy to sit there and cheer it on, is what I'm saying. After all, when nationalists and various forms of quote unquote right wingers were being targeted by the government several years back, these people cheered on. They didn't care about anybody's constitutional rights. They didn't stand up and say, well, I disagree with these people, but we can't have the government just, you know, violating their rights and just unilaterally saying they're terrorists. They were silent on this. But that don't make it right. Now that you're looking at some moves that might be putting the boot on the other person's neck. And that's the way they keep everybody in line. You know, when it's happening to the guys you don't like, you'll turn a blind eye and not ask any questions and cheer it on. You know, and when you do, just, you know, you always have to bear in mind that inevitably that same boot will be back on your neck at some point in time. It's going to be interesting how far they push that, this designation of left wing as domestic terrorism. And I think that's going to be depend on whether or not they can divert them off. You watch these operations they're pulling. And they are. They're operations, in my opinion. And the intention is to get that energy, suck that energy out of the grassroots left, away from protesting for Palestine and against Israel, and get it funneled into something else. I said recently, I think it was on a show with Sven, I fully keep expecting a new George Floyd here in the U.S. to suck that energy completely out. Now they've tried several. This ICE stuff has been one of their most recent, you know, these different events using ICE. These are put on. These take place in order to suck that energy out and get that energy sucked out of the grassroots left and get it funneled back into something else. You know, it's kind of like years ago, you know, when the Occupy Wall Street thing started, they quickly got the conversation changed to racism and gender equality. You know, you had the grassroots left, you know, organize, you know, getting into some protests against the corporations on Wall Street. They shut that shit down quick, didn't they? They divert it. They divert that energy somewhere else. But again, it's going to be interesting to see how far they go with it, because if they do keep it up, if they are unable to get that energy diverted elsewhere, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I think it's fairly predictable to see where it goes. And honestly, the grassroots left is they're ripe for the pickings, because they've been playing this on easy mode for years without even realizing it. You know, they've been playing this game you know, like on a tutorial mode in a video game. And what I mean by that is they're backed by the government. You know, they've done what they've done and nothing happens to them. You know, BLM riots, just all sorts of over the top ridiculousness attacking people on the political right. And nothing ever happens to them because, you know, they're backed by the powerful at the top. You know, the grassroots people don't know that. And those are the people that are going to get the education. If this continues, if they can't get that energy successfully diverted away from focusing on, the things like Palestine and how the Israeli government occupies the United States government, if they can't successfully divert that energy, then you're going to see more kinetic, shall we say, operation. And again, as I said earlier, the government doesn't change their playbook because it works. So as a result, you can sit here, I can sit here, and basically if they can suck the energy out and get it re-diverted, then that's all well and good. If they are not successful in doing that, it's real easy to predict where they're going to go. You're going to have a big event organized by various very popular, you know, left-wing people, you know, podcasters, whatever. A big event. And then, you know, things will get out of hand. And then the hammer will cometh down. And then a lot of these people, because you think about, they organize these Antifa type of things, these leftist stuff on things like Discord and stuff. And they actually, I mean, a lot of these grassroots people, they have no idea that, like, the feds are literally in their Discord channels. You have to understand, these people, again, they've been playing on tutorial mode. So they think that when they're in their Discord channels, you know, discussing, you know, an operation, a riot, whatever, you know, they really think that, like, oh, well, we're so clever. They'll never figure out we're here doing this. Trust me, they know. They're there. You could potentially see leftists get their very own version of Charlottesville. And then they will get an education, a crash course, as it were, to my knowledge, to this day. Just to highlight that before we move on, you know, to my knowledge, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, but to my knowledge, none of the organizers of Charlottesville who put that together, you know, none of them went to jail. Hell, as far as I know, they still have their Twitter accounts. But the regular people that showed up, you know, in good faith, you know, to a protest, plenty of them went to prison. If this rolls on, the leftists are going to discover that very same lesson. They're going to have these prominent people promoting it, being out in the streets, and then if it goes south, a bunch of them will get rounded up and put into prison. And the organizers, they won't be any, oh, you incited this, you caused it. No, they'll just walk scot-free. They don't need to change their playbook because the playbook works. You know, if you're a coach of a football team and your playbook works every team you play against, you know, don't fix what ain't broke. And for an education, yes. Part of what makes these people vulnerable to this too, you know, leftist people, is because, I don't want to put it, they're very emotionally fragile. And what I mean by that, I'm not doing like they do and throwing insults around at people. You know, I make a statement like that and I'm going to follow it up with why I say that. By and large, most of them very much live inside a bubble. You know, they only read articles by other people who view the world the same way they do. You know, they only watch or listen to a podcast by another hardcore leftist that believes, or at least promotes, what they believe. This is taking advantage, leveraging the human condition, because most people, I always say, you know, with things you learn doing this, as somebody who does this, and, you know, is that by and large, you learn real quick that people don't really care about your opinions. They want to hear their opinions coming out of your mouth. And if you're a cynical person, you can leverage that sometimes to have a really broad and, you know, wide audience. You just tell people what they want to hear. They want to hear their opinions coming out of your mouth. So they take advantage of that, and these people kind of live in their little bubble. They do not go out and, you know, for instance, if a grassroots leftist decided to check out this show, we're about 25 minutes into this show, and they would have gotten, like, they could sit here, and like when they get in their Discord and somebody says, you know what we need to do? We need to have a, you know, do this. And they remember this and go, man, I mean, that guy, he kind of said this was going to happen, but they don't do that. See, I do read other material, other people's material, you know, granted briefly, because sometimes it's pretty low tier, but sometimes, you know, it's worth reading. Now, it doesn't bother me to be at least familiar with, you know, what left-wing people they can believe. And, you know, some of it, you know, I agree with. If it's truth, for instance, you know, if a leftist says the healthcare system in this country is broken, well, I agree with that because it's an observable fact. That's the truth. It doesn't matter that, you know, literally everything else that comes out of this person's mouth is stupid and absolutely farcical. That one thing is true. You can sit there and say, oh, well, you know, the healthcare system is amazing in America. No, it is literally broken beyond belief. But again, you have to just remember that these people are absolutely no idea what people like us actually think and say and believe, because they don't listen to us. They don't, you know, they don't. They stay in that echo chamber, that bubble. Because again, that's why I describe a lot of them as emotionally fragile, because they cannot hear, you know, they can't listen to someone else's opinion and say, well, I actually agree with that. I mean, I disagree with everything else this guy says, but on that, he's right. They don't do that, like, ever. And as a result, point being, as a result, it makes them very easily manipulated. Because generally, you're going to wind up with people listening to the same handful of the same voices. You know, so listening to the same handful of voices. And yeah, that's where the manipulation winds up coming from. You know, you... Yeah. So anyway, that's enough of that. I've gone on about that. I ran out of interest. 28 minutes is the best I can do. Ran out of interest on that topic. They're not going to listen anyway. But as we watch it unfold, it will be interesting to see where it goes. But to never forget, this talk of cracking down, anytime you hear current talk of cracking down on left-wing terrorists, this doesn't have anything to do with any actual terrorism they've done. And they have done plenty. Definable as terrorism. It's about the fact that now they're criticizing Israel. They're pointing out the Israeli occupation of the U.S. government and ownership of U.S. politics. That's what it's about. They don't give a shit if they blow up your part of your power grid and strand you on your way to work. They could care less about that. It's about this. It's all pretty obvious. I'm not going to shed a tear, you know, but I'm not going to cheerlead it either, because I know what's going on. If we wind up seeing more of this stuff come about, it's tempting, like I say, it's tempting to cheer and say, yeah, they're finally getting theirs. But it's just all part of the program, all part of the programming, our programming. I wanted to get into our, you know, into these Christian specific things that really this matters. I mean, it's an interesting discussion we just had, and it's fine. You know, I don't talk about anything I don't, you know, that I think doesn't matter. You know, if it's not interesting to me to an extent. But the stuff that matters is our Christian stuff, because it, as I always say, when you see these things, all of these things going on in the context of spiritual warfare, it all makes sense. When you start understanding how the world, I see people because I like conspiracy theory stuff because a lot of it, there's an element of truth to it. And, you know, one of the popular conspiracy theories, semi-popular, I see it repeated, you know, is this idea that we live in a simulation. And whenever I see people talking about making, you know, like little clips of TikTok-y or whatever, and they're talking about we live in a simulation, you know, watch this video. It's proof. We live in a simulation. The Matrix is glitching. And I always kind of chuckle to myself because it's like, you're so close. You know, there's an element of truth to that. When you start really understanding how the system works, you know, a simulation is where I think when people come up with, we live in a simulation, this is a form of recognizing that we live in a system that was created by a creator, but they don't want to acknowledge the creator. So they come up with, we live in a matrix or something like a movie. You know, we live in a simulation, but they're close. I mean, they're closer to the truth than probably they themselves understand when they're doing this. We live in a simulation. We're all asleep in a pod somewhere. Or, you know, this is a simulation. None of this is actually real. There's an element of truth to that. I think it's an instinctual recognition because it is becoming more obvious, I think, as things have been breaking down. The veil is thinning, if you want to use that term. And you know, they're starting to recognize it, but instead of being able to just accept that we live in a created realm that was made by a creator with a stated purpose in mind, they still have to put like a temporal, a physical element to it. You know, we're all plugged into a computer or something. We're not plugged into a computer. You're seeing spiritual warfare in the realm that God created. God created this realm, put us on it, put man on it with a purpose for a reason. We exist in time, and only us. The Lord exists outside of time. Now, Satan has been cast down into time, and they stuck him in here for a time being. And then I believe, of course, there's all these other entities out there, and we've discussed that before. When you go through the New Testament, and Jesus is casting out, as in the King James Version, sometimes they'll say, you know, these devils, they cast out devils. Sometimes they say unclean spirits. And it's always interesting to me when I always ask the question, what are these things? And like I say, we've discussed it before, and people automatically say, well, they're demons, which they define as, you know, the angels that follow Satan out. And that's not what these are. It's obviously, you're familiar with the Bible at all, it's clear that that's not what these entities are. They're something else. And then you get into, which we're not going to get into today, because like I say, we've discussed it before, but you know, these entities, what are they and do they influence you? And the answer to that is yes, they do very much. They very much influence people, and given enough influence, and if people surrender themselves to it, you know, things can go south pretty quickly. Again, I find it humorous when people will get off into the realm of we live in a computer simulation and they still do not want to acknowledge the Lord. They have to try to reinvent the wheel, come up with something new, some new cleverness. And again, they're close to the truth, and yet they cannot, they just can't accept the truth. It makes you think of, reminds me of, you know, when it's written that, you know, having eyes, they can't see, and having ears, they can't hear. They're so close, but they can't acknowledge it. And this brings me to the madness of all of it, particularly when it comes, you know, to sin and rebellion against God's laws, which I define God's laws here as basically, it's simply God's laws. Isn't about, you know, holy days and whatever. If you're looking at the Old Testament, you know, it's about understanding the parameters. If you're sticking with the idea, you live in a simulation. If you live in a simulation, you're going to do better in the simulation if you understand the parameters of the system and operating, you know, within those parameters. You know, here's the thing. And that people, a lot of people don't seem to understand. There's no, I've been through the Bible, multiple times, Old, New Testament. You know, the New Testament is shorter, so I've been through it more times. And I can tell you without a doubt, there is no prohibition, there is no commandment, no law from God. Hear me now. That says you can't be happy. You ever notice how people have that attitude? Like, God is this entity that just absolutely, by golly, he doesn't want you to enjoy life. They think God's laws, you know, when you talk about God's laws, they think, they actually have a mindset. And I'm not just talking about unbelievers. There are a lot of Christian people that go around that miserable. And you're like, you know, you interact with them and you figure out real quick that they think they're being pious. You know, they think they're acting more holy because they're all dour. And, you know, there's no prohibition from the Lord on being happy. Now, the lie comes in because people get convinced that sin is going to make them happy. Now, this is where it gets a little more tricky, I guess you could say. Interesting. The rebellion comes because they want to sin. The prohibitions on sinning, the cautions, the warnings about sinning are just simply warnings that things will not turn out well for you and you're not going to wind up happy. And 100% predictably, that's how it turns out. The more in sin somebody lives, now you might look at somebody, a sinful person, and on the surface, part of you may think they look like they're having a good time, you know. But you're always going to find a miserable person. The more immersed in sin, the more a hold of sin has in their life, the more miserable they are. And yet they act, they get so caught in this cycle. It's like they're just not sinning enough. You know, they get further and further out there. Like if they just double down even more. Sin is not happiness. It never brings happiness. It never brings contentment. It just not. You know, I mean, it just don't. I've always believed, you know, understanding one of the really great, great, great books in the Bible to understanding how the world works and understanding a lot of these things we talk about is Ecclesiastes. You know, the teacher goes out and he lives sin. Hey, you know, he talks about it, you know, went out, had all these women, went out, did all this drunkenness, went out and built great structures, all of these things to observe, you know, is he going to find contentment here? And he always comes back to no, you know, he tried it. He's tried all of that. He's lived in debauchery, tried it. Let's see if this brings contentment. And it never does. I always recommend it. It is. Ecclesiastes is one of my favorite books of the Bible because it really, you know, gets into a lot of the why are we here and how, you know, it's a good, what do I want to say, summary, so as to speak, of how the world, this world we live in, how it works and our purpose here. But again, you know, there's nothing that says, you know, God forbids you from being happy, from enjoying life. In fact, we're told to be content. Try to find a way to be content. What does content mean? To be happy in life. You know, you're never going to, if money is your pursuit, you're never going to have enough. You know, you get pursuing these worldly things, they consume you, and there's never enough, no matter how much you get. You're supposed to find contentment where you're at so that you don't miss out on what happiness could be there. But there is no, God doesn't forbid you from being happy. The devil comes in and convinces people that sin is going to make them happy. It never does. But then because of pride, people don't want to admit that and they double down on sin. Like, well, I just need to sin more. You know, I need to become more of a degenerate. Then I'll finally find some contentment. And this brings us to really the heart of when I started almost 40 minutes ago, of what I wanted to get into is this struggle against sin. You know, you're a Christian believer and you're trying to get your life right. And the struggle against sin. You know, and how the world short circuits that and gets people who are earnestly, they realize their life isn't where it needs to be. And, but the world still intercedes and will posture sometimes like they're helping, but they short circuit it. How do you, as a Christian believer, how do you deal with sin in your life? You know, particularly, you know, focusing in here now, particularly on what I would refer to as a recurring sin. You know, because everybody sins, we all know that. But I believe every person has something that is like, I don't know, they're, you know, Paul wrote about, you know, a messenger of Satan who was like a thorn, you know, just kept aggravating. I think everybody has a particular recurring thing that they, that's what they deal with. They have sin in other parts of their lives, but there's this one sticking thing that just is always there. You know, always causing a problem, you know, that seems to be a recurring problem. So how do you deal with recurring sin as a Christian believer? You know, getting your life, if you could just, and you get this mindset that if I can just overcome this, then I'll be right where I need to be. Which, look, as long as you're in this world, you're going to be dealing with sin and things around it, because that's just, again, that's part of being in this realm. Part of going through the trial, the education. No, I'm going to tell you something that if you listen, I do believe it will help you in dealing with this. Yeah, I'm not one of these people, you know, regular listeners. I'm not one of these people like, you know, these crackpots, you know. I'm not going to ever say, you know, the Lord spoke to me. Unless I ever tell y'all, This is what the Lord says. I'll be telling you because I literally heard a voice like one of the prophets of old. I don't think that's ever going to happen. So, you know, because I think we've kind of moved to a different place in time where that doesn't really happen now. But you know, if I ever did, you can bet I literally heard a voice. Now, you could say I was crazy. But again, that's and I may be. No, but, you know, I'm not one of these people that sit there and say, you know, claim to have seen things I hadn't seen or whatnot. But there are things. One of the few things I will say that I believe is spiritually revealed to me very many, many decades ago. I was much more than a kid. And it has stuck with me even all this time when it comes to these things. And that is when you're dealing with sin in your life. Hear me now. Focus on who, what you are, not on who you're not. And as we go into this, I'm going to point out how the world does the opposite. When you're dealing with sin in your life, particularly recurring sin, that thing that you feel like you could just overcome it, you will have a tendency to focus, hyper-focus on that thing, that sin, that recurring sin. It becomes the center. Yes, you're focusing in the context of, I don't want to do that anymore. But the context here doesn't matter because you're funneling all of your energy into that. However, if you focus on who you are, because the reason you even have a problem, ask yourself this, why do I have a problem with this? Why do I even have a problem with doing that? And at some point, I believe a person will come along, you know, will respond rather with, well, because that's not who I am. You see, you're rejecting that sin. You're doing the right thing. You're rejecting the sin. And the reason you're rejecting the sin is because on a spiritual fundamental level, you say, that doesn't belong here. That's not who I am. You know, I know who I am. I know what I want to do. But the sin, you know, it's written in the New Testament, you know, the sin I don't want to do, this I keep on doing, you know, the madness of that. You know, when he says, you know, God's grace is sufficient, you know, you become hyper-focused on not doing it, and you're funneling all of your energy. But the reason you have a problem with it is because fundamentally you know that's not who I am. F- focus on who you are, not on who you're not. If that's not who you are, then quit giving it your attention. You may be saying, but GPD, if I don't pay any attention to it, it's just going to keep happening. Well, you've been funneling your attention into it all this time, and it keeps happening. So really, what are you risking by trying something else? Focus on who you are. If that's not who you are, and you're rejecting that sin because that's not who you are, then focus on the actual who you are, what you are. You know, focus your energies into that. And what happens is, as you do that, that sin that you're dealing with, that recurring sin, it'll start drying up. Yeah, it'll keep popping up. But what eventually happens is it dries up and withers and dies on the vine because you're not watering it anymore. You're not giving it your energy anymore. Now, this brings me to the world claiming to help you does the opposite. I believe the Lord, you know, and I do it because this is one of those few things I'll say I believe it's a spiritual revelation, something that occurred to me. Again, this happened when I wasn't much more than a kid. I come to realize this, and all these decades later, I believe it's proven to be true, and I still believe that. So, you know, you go from focus on who you are. Don't focus on what you're not. Don't funnel all your energy because it becomes self-defeating. Now, you look at how the world works. Even in the name of helping you, maybe especially in the name of helping you. The world is not there to help you. It's to keep you dragged down into sin. And it's a really good example of this, because I was thinking about this the other day when I was considering, I jotted this down, thought, you know, I think I've touched on this maybe once before in the show, but I don't think we really got in depth in it. And I was thinking about counterexamples to it, how the world works. And what does the world do? The world tells you to identify with your sin. An obvious thing with this is all of this pride nonsense. Make that your identity. But a better example, and the example I want to use today, in the name of helping you, are these 12-step programs. I'm going to use Alcoholics Anonymous as an example of how the world gives you the opposite. You know, if the spiritually correct thing to do, and this is my opinion, I believe it is, focus on who you are, not on who you aren't. And again, these recurring sins will dry up and die on the vine. They'll just wither up and just die on their own. And next thing you know, after a while, it's really not even an issue in your life anymore. And you're like, what? Where did that come from? But if you look at these 12-step programs, what do? If you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing they start off with is what? Everybody sits around in a circle. Everybody introduces themselves. And what do they say? I am an alcoholic. My name is Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. Your words have power. Understand, you're created in the image of God. God spoke this world into existence. Now, you're in the image of God. Your words have power. You're not going to be able to speak a world into existence, but your words have power. You're sitting in a circle, and each one of you says your name. I'm Jim. I am an alcoholic. You're speaking that into reality. You're making that the focus. The entire focus on these programs is to focus on the sin. Now, on the surface, that seems like it makes sense, right? You got to fix a problem. You got to identify the problem. You got to deal with the problem, right? But I can't help but to ask, why would you go and why is drinking a problem? You know, if you live in a life of despair and you find some comfort in the bottle, what's the problem? Be a drunk. You know, whose business is yours? Especially if you're not hurting anybody, be a drunk. Well, you go to the program because you realize this isn't working for you. And on a fundamental level, you're saying to you, you looking in the mirror the day after a big bender, and you're saying, this isn't who I am. You know, I woke up in the floorboard of my car in a puddle of my own vomit. This is not who I am. This is not who I want to be. So you go to this meeting, and what do? They have you sit around and say what? This is who I am. I am an alcoholic. You speak that into existence. You've made that your focus. And here's the thing. There's always the looming air of failure in the background. You talk to somebody in one of these programs, you know, and I'm not downing the people in the program. They're trying to find a way out. I'm just saying it's a worldly program, and it sabotages a lot of people for failure. For all the people who say, yeah, I've been in that program and I've been sober for 40 years, there's a whole lot of people that go back over and over and over and fall off the wagon, and they don't find success. Some of them give up, throw their hands up. Now, understand, I'm using this as an example, but it applies across the board when it comes to recurring sin. I just think this example, talking about AA and how it works, I think that it helps to illustrate the point, but it doesn't just apply to that. Understand, any whatever your recurring sin you deal with that you want to be rid of because that's not who you are, you know, it applies. They make you state, they have you make this your identity. And you listen to this and they say, you know, oh yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I will always be an alcoholic. This is who I am. I had this disease, whatever the hell that means. What, you know, it's not like having, you know, a literal sickness. Oh, but it is, because I can't help myself. You see how they're speaking more and more power into it. I'm an alcoholic. I will always be an alcoholic. This will be looming over my head my entire life. Do you want to live like that? You sit here and say, because here's the thing. Oh, I got my medal. What medal? I've been 1 year sober. 1 year sober. I accomplished that. And everybody said, congratulations. You 1 year sober. You ain't had a drink in 1 year. What's the insinuation, though? You haven't had a drink in 1 year. But tomorrow, you know, and I've heard these people say this, you know, yeah, I have to recognize that tomorrow could all end. I could flush it all down the drain in the bottle tomorrow. You see, the defeat is that the victory, rather, over it. There's no victory. I'm an alcoholic. I will always be an alcoholic. And this is what I have to face for the rest of my life. That's like entering into a conflict and saying, telling everybody up front, the war will never end. This war will go on for a millennia. We will always be at war. Not very uplifting, is it? You know, you might be sober for a year, might be sober 5 years. The background insinuation here is that it could all end tomorrow, and it's like you're starting over from square one. Yeah, you might have been sober for 5 years, but you fell off the wagon last Saturday, and now it all you threw all that away. Now you got to start all over again. The insinuation here is it could end at any minute. The victory is never, you never sit there and say, I'm cured. In fact, that's part of the program is you're admitting, you're saying, I can never be cured of this incurable disease. That's a lie from hell. What does it mean to be an alcoholic? And again, I'm using this as the example. Understand, this isn't just about that. Apply it across the board, whatever your recurring sin is. But what does it mean to be an alcoholic? Look, you're just a drunk, okay? You're just drunk. For whatever reasons, you decide to find some relief in that. And that's why you keep choosing to do it over and over again. Look, if you want to believe that, you know, there's some biological thing driving you to do this, you know, you're free to believe what you want. But the reality is, at the end of the day, you're doing what you're doing, whatever your recurring sin is, because you're choosing to do it. There might be things that are emotionally driving you. And see, this is where following the truth in the Lord comes in, because, you know, as we are going through our judgment all the time as Christian believers, you're constantly looking at yourself and saying, why do I do this? Or why did I do that? You're constantly evaluating. It's a like an automatic thing running in your background all of the time. You're constantly reevaluating yourself and self-critiquing and looking for, you know, those times when you're justifying what you do. If you get down to the truth of it, you know, why are you choosing to drink? And the truth may be because you're really depressed, you know, because you really find no hope in this world. You're stressed out. You know, your life seems pointless. You know, living a good life is working a dead-end job that's never going to pay enough. And, you know, I don't know, paying child support to your ex-wife for your three kids that she never lets you see, and working your pointless wagey life for a boss that treats you like shit. I'd crawl off in the bottle too if that was the totality of life. And there's the lie. That's not the totality of life. Imagine when you're reading the New Testament, Jesus, you know, he went around healing people right and left. People that had actual physical things wrong with them, you know. This guy's a cripple. He's been a cripple his whole life, born crippled. And that guy wakes up every day and looks at his crippled legs. That guy wakes up every day and says, I'm a cripple. He repeats it. He reinforces, I'm a cripple. I'm a cripple. Everybody around him looks at him and says, that's so-and-so. He's a cripple. He's a cripple. And you live your whole life like that. That's all you know. You're defined. You are a cripple. And then this guy, Jesus, shows up and says, do you want to be healed? And you think about the story of the man by the pool. And he asks the guy, do you want to be healed? It seems like a silly question, but it's a relevant question. How comfortable have you gotten with the definition you keep giving yourself and everybody else keeps giving you? Do you want to be healed? This guy, Jesus, shows up and tells this cripple, get up, roll up that mat, and walk yourself out of here. And he does. He finds out he's free. He's not going around going, well, tomorrow I'll wake up and I won't be able to walk again. No, he's finally free. That's what Jesus does. Jesus means being free. It doesn't mean waking up every day and going, this is who I am and I just have to deal with it. No, Jesus is telling you, this isn't who you are. This is why you have a problem with it. If it's who you are, what's the issue? Embrace it. That's what the world says to do, right? World says, embrace it. This is your identity. You're just lying to yourself. This is who you just need to accept yourself for who you are. That's the problem. In fact, the problem is the rest of the world won't accept you for who you are. But you yourself have a problem with it because deep down inside you say, this isn't who I am. Again, why are you even unsatisfied with your condition? Be an alcoholic. Be a druggie. You know, doing meth makes you satisfied and content with your life. What's the problem with doing meth? You don't, though. It doesn't. Sin never does. So your lack of contentment with it stems from the fact that deep down inside you're saying, this isn't who I am. Why am I doing this? Why do I keep doing this? And yet again, the world will tell you to embrace it. That's who you are, and you have to accept that reality. Even in the context of claiming to help you overcome it or get a control of it, they're still telling you to define yourself. They're still saying you're a cripple on a mat. Jesus says, get up, roll up your mat, and walk. Follow me. Get up. Follow me. When you read about Jesus, when he first started gathering up his 12 dudes, you know, sometimes he'd just roll up on them and be like, hey, follow me. Like no introduction, no, let me tell you what I'm standing for in my long-term project and sell you on it. He'd walk up on these guys fixing their net, these fishermen, and say, follow me, and just keep on going. And they'd drop everything and go. Yep. Jesus ultimately says, get up, follow me. Are you walling around and no, this is who I am. As long as you are defining yourself by your sin, they got you. They may be claiming to help you. They may be, you know, however it's framed. Now, I'm going to tell you, as long as in your mind you're defining yourself by your sin, that's what's going to define you. That is going to be who you are. But if your problem with the sin is you're saying, that's not who I am, that's not who I want to be, then focus on who you are then. Then, okay, if that's not who you are, you know, if you are not an alcoholic, then who are you then? You know, because you can't just not be something. Does that make sense? You can't simply just not be that, because you have to be something. I hope that makes sense. It's fine. You focusing on, this is not who I am. I don't want to be doing this sin. Okay. Then ask yourself, then who are you? What do you want to be? What kind of man do you want to be? Okay, you're not an alcoholic. Then what are you? Because probably up to this point, that is who you are. That's how you have defined yourself. That is how you've let the world and the people around you define who you are. You know? Okay, if that's not who you are, according to yourself, if you look at it and say, I'm not satisfied with this because that's not who I am. It's not who I want to be, at least. I don't want to be a drunk. Okay, then who are you? Well, if the answer is I'm a man of God, I believe in Jesus Christ, then start focusing on that and what that means. Start funneling your energy into that. I'm not saying that magically overnight these things, these recurring sins that you're dealing with, just disappear. But I will say, if you quit watering them and focusing all of your energy, spiritual energy, into that, and instead focusing on who you are, start trying to get, manage that as best you can, but pour your energy into the things of God on a time scale, that stuff will dry up. It'll dry up and wither off the vine. Imagine, potentially one day somebody saying, man, I remember way back in the day you used to drink a lot. When's the last time you had a drink? And your answer isn't, I have been sober for 5 years. No, your answer is, I don't know. Hell, I still got a half bottle of rum sitting up there untouched in decades. I just never have thrown it out. I'm collecting dust. When did you quit drinking? I don't know. I lost interest in that. That's not who I am. You speak things into reality. Words have power. Be careful. The world will try to trick you into using those words to imprison yourself, to put yourself, to define yourself, to define your action, to find your mindset. Focus on who you are. Be careful what comes out of your mouth. Jesus warned over and over about what comes out of your heart, what comes out of your mouth. And the Pharisees were making a big show over ceremonially washing a dish. Jesus wouldn't say eat your food off of filthy tableware. He was pointing out the real danger is what comes out of your mouth, not what goes in. Because your words hold power. Understand, your words hold power. Start paying attention to what comes out of your mouth. Not necessarily like you hit your hand with a hammer and you start cussing. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you wake up every morning, what's the first thing you tell yourself? Start paying attention to that. What's the first thing you tell yourself when you get up every day? Because you probably do it without even considering it. And if you stop to consider it, you might start realizing why you have the attitude that you do in life. You start paying attention, like, well, doubt, when I wake up first thing in the day, the first thing I tell myself is another pointless day of doing crap I hate. Now I wonder what horrible things are going to happen to me today. Wonder what kind of catastrophe, you know? Pay attention. What comes out of your mouth? What do you tell yourself over and over? Pay attention to what's going through your mind. What are you telling yourself? Your internal dialogue. What you're telling yourself. And then ask yourself, if those aren't good things, if that's not where you want to be, why are you saying those things? Where is it coming from? And above all, focus on who you are. Quit focusing on that. Manage it as best you can. You're dealing with it. I'm not saying it's magically going away. Manage that. But start pouring your energy on, okay, if that's not, you can't just not do sin. You have to do something. You can't just not be this. Okay, then what are you? Whatever you what you have decided you are, pour your energy into that. Okay, you're a man of God and you believe in Jesus Christ and you want to learn about him. Then pour your energy into that. Pouring all your energy into, I'm never going to do that again. You know, the old meme, you know, about waking up hungover and deathly sick. And what does everybody always say? I'm never going to drink again. And then next weekend they're out drinking again. Focus on who you are. You're going to find, I believe you will find better results. Spiritually, you will find better results. Because I tell you, it's a whole lot easier to do something than to not do something. Because if you're just working on not doing something, okay, that implies at some point you are going to do it though. You know, you're not doing it for today, but what about tomorrow? It's a lot. You make a lot more progress focusing on actually doing something. Forget not doing something. You're doing something. You're pouring your energy into that. I hope that makes sense. And as Christian believers, I hope that helps. Like I said, it's something that has stuck with me basically my entire life. Focus on who you are. That's where your energy needs to be, not on who you're not. The world will try to define you. The world will try to tell you who you are. The world will try to get you to define yourself into something that maybe you're not, to define yourself by your sin. But if that's who you are, why aren't you happy with it? Well, because deep down inside, you don't believe that's who you are. That's why it's a problem. You're doing something that doesn't make any sense because that's not who you are. If that's not who you are, then who are you? What are you? And if you're a follower of Christ and a man of God, then start paying attention to that. Start doing that. Start getting that mindset. Putting all of your attention over here on sin, that just gives it more power. Focus on the Lord. Anyway, got to wrap up on that note. I wound up running a little bit long. Hope you got something out of the show today, especially this Christian stuff that we get into. I could just do the whole show on the Christian stuff, and really that's what I ought to do. But I know a lot of y'all like to hear, you know, about current events and stuff. And I stay up on these things. So, but at the end of the day, this is what I care about because this is what matters. None of this other stuff really matters. When you understand how the world works and why the world works the way it does, you really understand these temporal things, they don't amount to much of anything. They're all temporary. So you're just kind of talking about, you know, it's like being obsessed with the latest fad or something. It's just almost irrelevant, but we do stay up with it. So I do try to have a little something for everybody. But again, the Christian stuff, part of the matter, this is what matters. So again, I hope you got something out of it, especially that. Hope you enjoy the rest of the week. And as always, hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.